It is 3:06 on Friday afternoon. This is Political Rewind. Boy, what a busy afternoon. But before we get to the news, Jim Galloway, you picked today's theme song. So I'm going to give you the honor of telling us why you picked this song.
Well, before there was Stairway to Heaven, there was Johnny B. Goode.
And it was the...
That was a Chuck Berry theme.
Signature song of Chuck Berry, who passed away this past week. Great choice, Galloway.
Yeah, really good.
Nice job on that. Jim Galloway, the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is here, of course. You read him on Thursdays and Sundays in the newspaper, and he oversees the Political Insider blog. What are you working on for Sunday, Jim?
A 2018 governor's race between two Stacys.
Okay, terrific. And we're going to talk a bit about that later in the show. Anita Sharp, the Atlanta bureau chief of Bloomberg News. Thank you for being here today, Anita.
Great to be here.
And Hank Klibanoff, former editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, former editor of the Philadelphia Inquirer, now teaching journalism at Emory University. Hank, I don't know about you, but and I say this to all of you, really. The news is coming at us so fast and furious, I feel like we need to take a few cleansing yoga breaths to relax.
It's the giant feast that just keeps coming at us. You know?
So. Let's, I said at the very beginning of the show, we do have some breaking news today. Paul Ryan has been to the White House to tell President Trump that votes are not there to pass the health care bill. Let me, before I bring in the panel to comment on what's going on, let me walk you through just a little bit of the scenario here. By now, many of you already know that Speaker Ryan had initially called this vote for yesterday. He picked the date very intentionally, Jim, because it was the 7th anniversary of the day that the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, went into effect, and he wanted to throw it. He wanted to throw down against it yesterday.
And maybe he forgot how hard that was to pass.
Last night,
nobody knew.
Last night, after pulling the bill because he was still working the votes that weren't available at that time, he declared that it was going to happen today because President Trump had said, "You will vote on this bill. We want this bill to pass." So for a good part of today, we know that there's been lobbying on the bill all over Capitol Hill and on the airwaves because Tom Price is one of our own. We thought you should hear the way he was talking on behalf of the bill. This from Morning Joe this morning.
What will you change about it to convince them to vote yes?
Well, nothing's going to change at this point for this piece of legislation, because what people have to appreciate, again, is that there's a larger plan.
Just quickly, you agree that if you don't flip those votes in the Freedom Caucus, it won't pass, right?
Well, there's only a finite number of votes that you can where you have to get the 216 votes to be able to pass,
right. and you don't have it right now.
That's the job of the folks in the building behind me. But
question: if this bill does not pass today, President Trump has said he's ready to move on now to tax reform, infrastructure. Will this then be the end of this administration's attempt to reform the healthcare system in this country? Will you put it behind you as well?
Well, I think this bill is going to pass today, but I would take the president at his word. I think that he's done as much as anyone could ever expect a president to do to get a piece of legislation passed. All right.
Okay, so that was Tom Price this morning. A little bit later in the morning, there was a photo op at the White House. The president was having a meeting with business leaders, and the pool went in to get those pictures. And, of course, people shouted questions about the president's hopes for the bill coming to a vote and passing today. Listen carefully to the way the president deals with this.
So thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
We'll have to see what happens.
All right, panel. Well, we'll have to see. We'll see what happens. And then this morning, Tom Price asked whether or not they were going to get the votes, said, well, that's not what he essentially said was, well, I'll talk to the folks in Congress about that, not me. The administration seems to be really backpedaling right now. At least that's my impression. What do y'all think?
Well, look, I got to say, number one, if this vote fails, I think they still got to go back and get to it. Because if they want to do anything else, next on the agenda is tax reform. If they want to get tax reform going, they've got to take care of this, because there's so much money that they intend to cut loose by rejiggering the Affordable Care Act.
If you're doing the tax reform that they have in mind, there's a substantial loss of revenue to the federal government that they're going to have to figure out. I think it's partly we're looking at what happens when the person in the White House has sort of a novice's view of how healthcare works. And he himself says, you know, no one knew, nobody knew how complicated it could be. I think anybody who had been in Washington and hanging around that issue knew exactly how complicated it was.
And I want to bring you in, Anita, but I do want to very quickly point out our producer, Lisa Clark, is monitoring the activity on the Hill and at the White House. She's just tells us that they now are going to schedule a vote for 4 o'clock this afternoon, even though the votes apparently aren't there.
Which is not surprising. I mean, Donald Trump ask for the vote. It would be uncharacteristic of him to back down, and I think he does want to put this actually behind him. And I don't know that I think if it fails, and it's looking like it probably will, I think there's a really good chance that he'll just move on. And you know, if the rejiggered bill really isn't saving that much money for the federal government. At over 10 years, what is it now, $150 billion or something like that? So that doesn't really replace the money that will be lost from tax reform. But nevertheless, the president wants a win. He's going to move forward. He's not going to stay dealing with health care.
But I'll tell you, Hank, it's not just a president who's a novice when it comes to health care. It's a president who's very much a novice when it comes to dealing with Congress. Bill and I were talking earlier this afternoon. This is in no way like Obama moved the ACA, and it's in no way that a president, say Lyndon Johnson, would have moved Congress by bringing individual lawmakers in and cutting individual deals with them. I mean, how many side deals did the ACA have? I think five or six that I recall.
You know, I would agree with that. I guess I'm also thinking, yes, a novice with Congress, but someone also who perhaps through lack of conviction over some of the details of this was willing to go to the Hill and trade or even sell his convictions or his so-called convictions in order to just get what passage of any kind of sort, mm-hmm. and was willing to sacrifice the mental health issues and the maternal care components of it, which is a huge issue.
Well, you could make a real case that this is a very anti-family with all the compromises, you know, with maternity, with pediatrics, with all the stuff that they are removing. I think politicians would be slaughtered if they vote yes for this, and then when re-election time comes around.
Yeah, I want to be a little cautious, if I may. Because the reports coming out of Washington suggest, especially reporters who are on the Hill today, this afternoon, are saying the energy is really gone, the wind is out of the sails, whatever expressions they're using. We are assuming they're correct, that it appears this bill is likely to fail. That doesn't mean it will fail. I mean, we'll see what happens when the votes are counted. And I just want to make that clear because we really don't know. It just doesn't feel, according to the people who are up there, like it's going to win.
Right. And quite frankly, part of this is simply to move the vehicle, to move the bill, to get it into the Senate where the real negotiations can begin.
Yeah, but, you know, Anita, I want to pick up on what you said because I think our listeners need to hear more about what you're talking about. In an effort to win the votes of the Freedom Caucus, the most conservative members of the House, who have been very resistant to this measure all along because what they told their constituents they wanted was repeal of Obamacare. If that had been all that had happened, I think it's quite likely. If they had just decided we're going to repeal Obamacare, the Freedom Caucus certainly would have been there to vote for that. But in the bill that was written to replace, as you point out, in the compromise to get them on board, the president agreed to removing, I think it's called Title I, the essential elements of the health care bill. And there's like 10 very significant items, some of which you mentioned, that Obamacare required an insurer offer.
Only emergency room service, only maternity care. Small things like that.
They're just basics. It's like your basic cable. That comes with the package.
Pediatrics. When you start getting the kids into it, boy, does that give you something to run against if you are, you know, trying to defeat people who voted for
but,
this.
But clearly what we've got is we've got a House Republican caucus with two entirely different visions of what how we should be handling health care. You've got the Freedom Caucus who says, get Washington out of it. It's, you know, it's a little bit of a Darwinian approach. But then you've got the Paul Ryans who are at least willing to live for a while with the remnants of Obamacare.
And you haven't even gotten to the Democrats yet.
Yeah, right. Well, of course, the Democrats have been so marginalized we don't even hear about them. And they've been very happy to just sit on the sidelines and watch Republicans go at one another's throats over this thing.
And I don't know how deeply we want to get into this here, but I did have somebody who's very well-read, very smart, sophisticated, ask me today, so, well, why couldn't Trump just do an executive order and repeal Obamacare? And the answer is, you know, he couldn't. I mean, it's...
Yeah. It's budgetary.
Yeah.
We should, as you talk about maternity care, we should point out that Budget Director Mick Mulvaney, got himself into a little hot water. He said this, if you live in a state that wants to mandate maternity coverage, what this bill would do is kick it down to the states to decide what essential services they wanted the insurers in their state to offer. So Mulvaney said, if you want maternity coverage, that's up to the state to provide it. He was asked, well, then what do you do if your state doesn't cover it? And Mulvaney said, essentially, you should move to another state.
Well, we're going to have another great migration out of the South.
Well, I think part of the problem with the bill and all the changes is just the language. The language is so confusing. People can't follow it. They've said, okay, we're going to put $15 billion toward mental health and toward maternity, but how does that get applied? And it's just it's so unclear.
Yeah. So we understand that this has been a battle from the start, certainly between moderates who want one thing, conservatives who want another, and then they all have to put their eye on the Senate, where the most conservative aspects of the bill are never going to fly. So we already know that becomes a real problem. Jim, I think the other thing, to pick up on your note talking about how President Obama and Ted Barfield just tweeted us and said, come on, it was Pelosi and Harry Reid who cut all the deals to pass ACA, not
Obama. Sure, okay,
Obama.
All right.
But the point is they spent weeks and weeks and weeks, whereas this bill has been in the process for 18 days. No wonder they're having a hard time finding consensus, and no wonder people are so confused about what it does and doesn't do.
Well, you could actually, if you don't mind me saying, you can go back to 1992 when Clinton first came into office where this issue was put on the front burner.
Yes.
It's not as if there haven't been, you know, a million ideas to come down the pike since then. So for the Republicans to not have this sort of worked out in this short period of time is only a surprise if you forget the fact that we've been talking about this for 25 years.
And people have been running for 7-8 years on repealing Obamacare.
Right.
So this shouldn't have been rushed in 18 days.
So they've been debating this throughout the day in the House. They've had several – they've got to take a number of procedural votes before they get to the main event, which we're now, as Lisa Clark has told us, they say they're going to start at 4 o'clock. So various members of the House have been taking their minute to go into the well and talk about the bill. The one Georgian we captured that we actually saw come up and take the well was Democrat John Lewis. And as you can imagine, he used his 1 minute to give a stem winder.
I'm going to fight every single attempt to turn a deaf ear, a blind eye, and a cold shoulder to the sick, to our seniors, and to working families. Mr. Speaker, I will fight every day, every hour, every minute, and every second. I oppose this bill with every breath and every bone in my body. We must not give up. We cannot. I will not give in. Not today, not tomorrow, and never, ever. On this bill, there's only one option, and that option is to vote no.
John Lewis on the floor today.
Wow. You don't often hear him get excited quite that much.
Oh, wait a minute. Really?
Maybe.
Well, it sort of makes you wonder if they're going to try another sit-in.
Okay, so let's assume they're going to go ahead with a vote. Help me understand this, all of you. What's the strategy behind that? Why vote on this thing? I mean, they can pull it and go back and work on a new version of the bill and trot it out more slowly.
If you're Donald Trump, you're trying to punish somebody.
Right. And guess who that might be? Paul Ryan.
Yeah. Right. That strike, is that what you think is
going on? Well, I think this ends up looking bad for Paul Ryan, I guess is what I'm saying. And, these guys have not been in love with each other from the very beginning. They each refused to endorse the other. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. The only other one is that this is truly a conspiracy by C-SPAN to try to drive viewers to watch them this afternoon instead of
watching basketball.
But seriously, if you think about Donald Trump, the deal maker, the executive, if he's got a subordinate who has underperformed, well, he's going to make him eat it.
Mm-hmm. So Anita, with that in mind, the New York Times had a front page story today, citing four unnamed high-level figures in the Trump White House who say that the president is irritated that he allowed Paul Ryan to stack the order of legislation, that he allowed Paul Ryan to start with health care, which, although the president said, who knew it could be so complicated, most people did have a sense of how complicated it was, that he would have led with tax reform, which is much more important to the president, we think, even though he campaigned on day one, Obamacare. So it does appear that the president feels as though he's been kind of led down a garden path here, which does suggest maybe he does want to put Ryan on the spot and say, go ahead, let's see what happens when you try to take a vote, and let's see how badly you get beaten and how you'll pay for this. Yeah?
Well, I do think that is part of it. I also think another part of it is maybe taking the gamble that these legislators won't want to go on the record as voting no, and so they will vote yes when push comes to shove. Maybe a gamble there. So that may be part of it. The other part of it is I think he wants to appear decisive and not wishy-washy, and this is a way of doing that. I'm not sure he cares particularly about the legislation the way he does about some other things, and I do think he wants to move on, and I think he will. So I think my view is that if this doesn't pass, then it's going to be a while before we see anything materialize on health care.
Yeah, President Trump did send out a couple tweets this morning. I was looking to see if I thought I had him with me. I don't, but I can paraphrase him. One tweet went out and said essentially, come on, Republicans, you've been wanting to repeal Obamacare. Now is the time. This is your moment. The other one, a little bit more specifically pointed, he said, this is your chance essentially to get rid of Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, well, he was directing that at the Freedom Caucus.
Yes.
And he said that if you vote against this bill, you're essentially letting Planned Parenthood funding continue.
So how does it, okay, so we all seem to agree that this does not make Paul Ryan look good. There was a suggestion on our show Wednesday that Ryan, who's a smart guy, no question, doesn't have the skills to be a good manager of a bill. And that does seem to be the case, doesn't it, Jim?
Well, you know, this is the same scenario that I think would have happened if John Boehner had been there. I'm not sure. I mean, they have changed the speakership, but I don't think they've changed the math any.
Yeah, I think, you're right. The Freedom Caucus bedeviled John Boehner throughout his tenure and finally pushed him out the door.
And you have to remember that these are Tea Partiers, basically. Mm-hmm. The Freedom Caucuses are Tea Partiers, and Tea Partiers preceded Trump. They are not creatures of Trump.
Okay, but we do, I think, agree that this does not make him look like a strong leader. This is a bad way to start 2017 with an all-Republican Congress.
I guess I'm thinking that what really matters is what President Trump does if it fails in the next few days, and whether he hangs Paul Ryan out to dry, whether he tweets about him, whether he sends some, in which case he won't get any of his packages through
Well,
Congress.
Right. And that's kind of sort of the discussion right now, right. is that if this fails, then, you know, failure breeds failure, success breeds success. And so what does this mean for the rest of the agenda? And also, we have to remember, Paul Ryan wasn't running for this.
Oh, he didn't want it at all.
He didn't want it at all. And so maybe he doesn't let himself be the whipping boy. Maybe he says, hey, this is a thankless job. I'm out of here. And chaos ensues.
The president was asked during that brief opportunity that reporters had to talk to him this morning whether or not Ryan should remain as speaker. And the president signaled, yes, he should.
As of that moment, I'm sure that was true.
Well, okay. So, okay. Yeah. So, before we take a break, another question here. President Trump did say some weeks ago that he thought perhaps the best thing that Republicans could do was to let Obamacare remain in place, despite the fact he'd been campaigning to kill it. But that once he became president, he thought maybe we should let it stay in place and watch it fail, because then the Democrats own it. So two questions, Jim. One is, so that's going to be the case if this bill fails for the time being. But it seems to me, number one, that Republicans have now put themselves in a position where they do own Obamacare, whether they like it or not. And more important, can the president do anything to undermine ACA in such a way that if it remains in place?
They already have. They've already been doing things to undermine. I mean, ever since they pulled the advertising campaign before the final deadline, they have told the IRS not to prosecute those who don't. Don't sign up for insurance. So yeah, they've and the exchanges that are out there are desperately in need of repair. Yes.
Okay. We're going to take a break. It's 3:28 on Friday afternoon. Tweet us at PoliticsGPB. A number of you already have. We'll look at them and read a couple of them, the ones that appear to be meaningful for the conversation when we come back. This is Political Rewind. We'll be back in a moment.
Hey, this is David Green, host of Morning Edition. I'm here to talk with you about that poking feeling, the one that keeps reminding you to support public radio. You can support the programs you love by donating your used vehicle. That old car or truck could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station. All you have to do is call, and you might even receive a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR, and thanks.
You're listening to Political Rewind with Bill Nigut here on Georgia Public Broadcasting. We're an 18-station radio network of GPB. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, ranked among the top universities in the nation in commitment to undergraduate teaching.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm here with Hank Klibanoff, a journalism professor at Emory University, former editor of the Atlanta Constitution. Was it the AJC? Or you? Yeah,
yes,
of course.
Right.
You weren't
yes.
two separate papers.
No.
You're too recent for that.
Now, Brother Jim here, he might go.
I have worked on every single separate entity. I've worked for the Journal, for the Constitution, and everything in between.
And the .com.
Anita Sharp, too, who is the bureau chief, Atlanta bureau chief of Bloomberg News, joins us as well today. So thank you all for being here. We've just gotten word that Fox News is reporting that James Comey, director of FBI, was seen a few minutes ago leaving the White House. That, who knows? That, but you know what? Given the
We need some dramatic music to go with that.
Well, Jim, right. You know, look, we know nothing, but this is, but our life is to speculate in some cases. If Comey's at the White House, it can't be because Trump wants to have a little conversation with him to see what he knows about Russia. You've got to assume there's something else happening here.
Well, let me see. It could be a summons. It could be a summons. If it were a summons, it would be a vast change in direction from previous administrations. who have really tried to stay away from FBI directors.
Yeah, I mean, we'll watch and see what happens. We do.
If it were a notice, I mean, this follows one day after the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee made the same trip up to the White House.
Yeah.
And one has to think that in some way it's related to that.
Well, you never know. What's interesting to me about it, Anita, is that it sort of, in a strange way, reminds me a little bit of all the attention that was paid. I think it was Phoenix, where Loretta Lynch, the former attorney general, was sitting in her plane on the tarmac. Bill Clinton landed his plane there, and he crossed the tarmac and had a meeting with her, and everybody wondered, hey, what's going on? Is he trying to influence her investigation of the Clinton email scandal and other things? So the point is, we all read a lot into these kinds of situations, but it is worth saying the FBI director serves at the pleasure of the president.
Well, exactly.
Actually, he does not.
I thought he does.
He serves a very strict 7-year term.
I think the president can fire him.
Yeah, the president can't fire him, can he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
We're going to have to check. We'll check that out.
We will check that. Yeah. But you know, that would be an interesting turn of events.
Yeah. Yeah. We know nothing, but Hank, you know.
I'm sitting here thinking maybe he just, you know, lost a cufflink the last time he was there in the White House, and that there's a listening device attached to it.
All right, so we're gonna use though this news that Comey was up at the White House as an opportunity to sort of move in a different direction. We will keep abreast of what develops in healthcare while we're on the air, although we don't expect to vote until 4 o'clock. We'll let you know if things are developing as we go forward. Before we move on, is there anything else we need to say about healthcare at this point? Are we in good shape? Some Georgians will say this, Jim. There are a lot of Georgia Republicans who might be breathing a sigh of relief because they think this bill would have hurt this state.
Well, and the other thing, just to keep in mind and keep watch on, if this thing gets out of the House, if it goes to the Senate, then we do still have Johnny Isaacson recuperating at home.
Yes,
I know he's given us assurances that he's still active and he would make it to any kind of vote. But the other thing to watch on that is Nathan Deal. If Nathan Deal thinks any bill is bad, then he's going to be raising all sorts of hell.
Okay, before we move on, just some tweets on this subject. Mark Vanderhoek tweets, Obamacare is essentially the Republican version of universal insurance, which is why dismantling it is giving them, I think Democratic version is what he means of universal insurance, which is why dismantling it is giving the Republican fits. Edward Funt says, one thing is for sure, got to get some insurance for my Twitter machine before the explosions tomorrow morning. He's anticipating that on Friday night and early Saturday morning, President Trump tends to tweet with some regularity. So we'll keep looking at tweets on Politics GPB. Devin Nunes, the House Chair of the Intelligence Committee, or the Chair of the House Intelligence Committee, Jim, paid an odd visit to the White House the other day. Tell us about that.
Well, first, I guess you have to go back to Monday when they had the first hearing, and they had Comey and the head of the NSA, and the Democrats talked about the links between Russia and the Trump campaign, the possible links, and Republicans all talked about the leaks. All right. Then, curiously, on Wednesday, you had the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee walk to the White House and leak some information that he got to someone outside his committee, President Trump.
And there was a lot of question as to why Nunes went to the White House. He held two news conferences. He held a news conference on the Hill, in the Capitol, in which he revealed to reporters he had received this information suggesting that there may have been incidental collection of Trump White House folks, including possibly the president himself, as intelligence agencies were listening to their prime targets, whoever they might be. He was very disturbed by this, he said, and he thought he should go tell the president about this. So he went to see the president and came out of the White House and held a second news conference with White House reporters and essentially said the same thing, how disturbed he was. So before we
And only then did he tell his Democratic membership.
He didn't talk to anybody else on the Intelligence Committee. We're told this morning his staff didn't know he was going to do this, so let alone Democrats on the committee. Last night he went on Sean Hannity, and here's how he explained why he did what he did.
But to me, it's clear that I would be concerned if I was the president, and that's why I wanted him to know, and I felt like I had a duty and obligation to tell him, because as you know, he's been taking a lot of heat in the news media, and I think to some degree there are some things that he should look at to see whether in fact he thinks the collection was proper or not.
So Anita, this is an odd situation. The chairman of a committee that is now empowered to investigate, among other things, whether Russia and the Trump campaign were in collusion during the presidential race, among other things that involve the White House as possible targets of an investigation, feels it's his responsibility to go to the White House and tell the president some of what he's learning disturbs him greatly and maybe reinforces the president's controversial tweet in which he said, you know, the Obama administration was wiretapping me. This is very strange behavior.
Well, and it seems like just as a reader, it certainly looks very much like it was possibly orchestrated. I need somebody official. I need something besides a tweet. I need somebody who's part of this investigation to say, yes, we are finding evidence that what you tweeted has got some basis and some validity, and we need to get it out there. And that seems to be what happened.
Here's my very simple question on this, and from a very simple mind. Why would this not be... There's an FBI investigation into this.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI investigation at some point takes in an examination of what role the president himself played as a candidate. Why is this not obstruction of justice? Why is somebody, head of a House committee who gets classified information that no one else is allowed to get, and without sharing it with his counterparts in the Democrats, and forget even that, walks it over to the White House and gives it to someone who arguably would be a target or a subject of this investigation at some point? Why is that not interfering with the investigation?
It would all have to depend on the content, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm.
Well, part of the problem is Nunes says he doesn't have the information actually in hand. He says he was told this. He's waiting to get this information. And in fact, one of the reasons I think it's a little bit difficult for us to put our arms around this story and talk about it with any specificity or insight is that Nunes has told this story two or three different ways.
Right.
He's made it very confusing for anybody to follow in any way. But
that's an old Eisenhower tactic, by the way.
Eisenhower?
It has been done on purpose before. Confuse the heck out of them.
All right. But here's what I think we can talk about. And I'd love, Hank, to get your take on this, because you're teaching journalism right now. We know that facts don't matter anymore. We know that, unfortunately, in the world of politics today, facts have less and less relevance. It strikes me that people are going to come away from the Nunes story believing in what they already believe one way or the other. Yes, he acted in a rather heroic manner to help alert the president that, you know, that people were listening in on his conversations, that the president's been right all along, that he was wiretapped. And people on the other side are going to be horrified by Nunes. And there was a time when even people with different opinions on things like this could find common ground. We don't get there anymore.
We've lost that. I mean, there's no doubt we have lost that common ground, and it's truly a shame. I mean, we've all lived through those periods of times when people would come together. Going back to Nunes, I don't know that he has sufficient political capital and the great body politic to win that default support from people who might be default Republicans, might be even default Trump supporters. I don't think he has it. I think he's looked upon here as someone who just responded very poorly under stress.
But and regardless of what the public opinion reaction to it is he's got to worry about what's happening, what will happen within Congress, because if Democrats pull out of that investigation, if they say no, we're not going to play this, then it loses all credibility.
I've got to interrupt. The Washington Post just reported this quote. Trump says, quote, "We just pulled it. The healthcare bill apparently is not going to come up for a vote." And it wasn't the Speaker who made this announcement. It was the President of the United States, Donald Trump. That is a I'm flabbergasted in some ways by that announcement. And so,
well, you hope he told the Speaker as the Speaker was returning to the Hill.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it makes sense the President did it, since it was the President who demanded that Ryan go ahead and take a vote. Okay, so let's go back to that for a minute. Let's park newness, because there is more to talk about, more news that developed there. But Jim, we can't even begin to figure out today, and this is something we'll have to get sort through for our show Monday, what the implication of this is.
Well, I can tell you what, if you're Tom Price, you're wondering, why am I here? That has to be going through his head right now. I just can't believe that Tom Price is going to let this go.
Well, the question is whether he's going to have the backing of the President of the United States who put him in that position.
Well, I think it's interesting that he pulled it, because to me that suggests that that the President is backing down and perhaps he's not going to move on. That
right.
He is going to
More negotiations.
Yeah, yeah. But this is going to spill into next week and maybe beyond that.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to watch that and see. All right. By the way, before we go back to newness, Lisa just pulled this for us. In our system, law enforcement is an executive power. The FBI is thus an executive branch agency. It is not independent. It's part of the Justice Department. The FBI director is subordinate to the Attorney General in the chain of command. I don't know, Jim, that suggests that, in fact, while an FBI director is appointed, I think it's a 10-year term, perhaps he or she could be terminated by an executive order, whether it's the Attorney General or the President. We don't know that for sure.
I'm looking it up.
He's looking it up, too. All right, go back to Nunes, because as we continue this story, the Democrats on the Intelligence Committee were furious that Nunes did this. They were supposedly going to meet today, and Nunes was going to give them, he was going to receive the documents to back up what he said about the incidental collection of some White House folks. And yet they didn't. He didn't get that information today. And now he's canceled a hearing that was set for next week to talk to Sally Yates, the acting attorney general who was fired by Trump, James Clapper, other Obama administration folks, to try to see what they could say about all this. And now that's been canceled.
Right, right. And quite frankly, that trip to the White House kind of played into a theme that I had expected on Tuesday, next Tuesday, when Sally Yates got up there, that House Republicans intended to make her walk the plank.
Explain why.
That they were going to hold her responsible for all the leaks that they're very much upset about. The Mike Flynn leak, the leak that says the Obama administration had spread evidence of its investigation to all these different intelligence outlets. She was kind of in charge. She had been in charge of the agency for, 20 days? But I think that was, but she was still number two.
Yeah. The question becomes whether or not, you know, this, now does Nunes pull this because the President's already had enough bad news this week and he can't control exactly what people are going to say next week?
You know, the more I think about this, the more I'm saying, so what if the President or someone high up in the administration was caught in an intercepted communication with the Russians? Does that make me feel any better that they weren't going directly after the President or that high up person? If we had a story in Georgia right now that a major FBI investigation into a significant gambling and porno ring, add whatever you want in there, methamphetamine ring and all this stuff, that they were being targeted, and that in this effort to wiretap or survey. Three state legislators were caught calling in, asking for their payoff. We wouldn't say, oh, my God, but this was not a, really an investigation into those three state legislators. It was into the criminals. You know, we would still feel pretty upset that our legislators are involved with
so,
this.
It's happened.
Yeah, right. So I'm saying it doesn't make me feel any better if to hear that they weren't targeting the president or the candidate at the time if he ended up on some intercepted communication.
Okay. But
if.
But the question here becomes, if he's not the target of these things and yet claims to be that they were listening in on him, so you're saying that maybe the president has a point here?
No, I'm saying it doesn't make me feel any better about the president's involvement in this thing just because he was intercepted.
Right, okay. Right,
all
right,
I'm sorry. Yeah. I got you the wrong way. All right.
Right.
Which just goes to show I need a break. It's been a very busy day, and so
yes,
I'd like
has.
To take 30 seconds, get our second break out of the way. It's 3:46. We'll come back with more of Political Rewind after this.
What a week in Washington.
Let's be sure that our Supreme Court doesn't get to be one of those agencies that's captured on any subject.
Nobody will capture me.
We must defeat ISIS.
Go with our plan. It's going to be terrific.
I'm Kelly McEvers. Supreme Court nomination hearings, healthcare, what it all means for you, and what's next, plus music news this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's 4 till 7 right here on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Jim Galloway, Anita Sharpank-Klibanoff are at the table on a very, very busy news day. I'm just glad that at 9:29 tonight, I'm not going to have to worry, apparently, about whether there's going to be a vote in the House, and I can tune in to watch the Wildcats beat UCLA. My son married into a University of Kentucky family, and I have completely adopted them. And Nate Silver, the great predictor of political outcomes, says that Kentucky's got a 68% chance to win tonight.
If they're not Bulldogs, I just don't care.
Jim, let's talk a little bit about state politics. You had a really interesting column the other day about a pact, a sort of a silent agreement.
Right, just
about
a
the
truce.
State's abortion statutes and how they...
Adoption.
I mean, adoption. I apologize. Adoption statutes and how they relate to... how people have agreed not to open
right,
them up.
Right, right, right. Georgia has not had any major rewrite of its adoption statute since 1990. And that kind of coincided with the rise of the gay rights movement, if you will, in the state. Since then, for 27 years... legislators have shied away from that bill because they know that every time they bring it up, there was going to be on the Republican side, on a growing Republican side, an effort to bar lesbian and gay parents from participating in foster care or from adopting children.
Is it a bar, or is it just say that private agencies would have the freedom
originally it was a prohibition that they were worried about. But what happened was the U.S. Supreme Court in 2015 declared gay marriage constitutional. All the parties thought that was the all clear signal. They brought out a major rewrite this year, and now they have a kind of a religious liberty amendment tacked to it, which would give legal protection to any child placement agency that doesn't want to work with, say, gay or lesbian parents or a divorced parent, or wants to only place black children with black parents. But pretty much the great supposition here is this is targeted at LGBT. Parents.
Is that? But that bill is,
and the bill has now been pretty much killed because
right.
of that. There's
right.
going to be a last ditch attempt that's being made this afternoon, and probably will continue till Monday or Tuesday to find a substitute vehicle for that legislation.
Anita, you would think that perhaps the culture wars over this sort of thing would finally be settling down a bit. The religious liberty bill in the Georgia legislature went nowhere this session, first time in like three sessions in which it was a hot button issue. But it still looms large whenever the conservative members of the House and Senate can bring it up.
Well, I don't see it dying down anytime soon. I think, you know, in terms of the session, this year's session, clearly Deal was going to veto anything that came out. So it was sort of pointless to push it. But I feel like people are still out there and want to see, you know, make some noise around this.
But if I could, this isn't just coming from the Democratic side. Multiple Republican administrations have participated in this truce,
right?
Because Georgia has seen its foster care population increase by at least a third over the last few years, and these kids need parents, and there aren't enough of these parents, and so DFACS has been placing. I mean, you would rather a kid go to any loving couple than you would to see him or her stay in a state institution.
Okay, but apparently that bill's not going to go very far. And the governor did already express himself on this. He said, look, this is a bad idea, which I obviously...
Right, and you know who's the last one to work a revision of the state adoption law in 1990? It was a state senator named Nathan Deal.
Really?
Yes,
okay.
It was.
Oh, you know, it's nice to have
great
an old
insight.
Guy like Galloway
great.
On the show,
right.
isn't it? You know, Hank, I said in the opening of our show today that this has been a no drama, I said low drama session. Not that that's a bad thing, but it has been. It's just been hard to find. You know, if you were still editing the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, I think you'd have a hard time finding a lot of really big stories put on the front page out of the Capitol, I mean.
You know, that's a good question as to why that is. I mean, first of all, there probably is a diminished overall number of people covering the state capitol. I think the AJC puts enormous resources behind it, but I think others, there's probably been some retrenchment, and there's not as many people, reporters, knocking on doors trying to find out things that are going on. I think we knew going into the session that it was going to be a limited number of issues to begin with. That was intentional. Am I right on that?
Right. And look, you've had a whole lot of air sucked out of this by Trump in Washington.
Yeah, I think that's interesting.
Yeah. Right.
Anita, I wonder to some extent whether... Obviously, the focus has been on Trump. That doesn't mean they couldn't have been introducing a lot of bills that would get headlines because they were hot-button issues. But it seems that legislators themselves are wary about being high drama in the way Donald Trump is. He seems to have kind of suggested – people have sort of calmed down, I think, watching him up there, yeah?
Well, I don't know if they've calmed down so much as sitting on the sidelines, because the game has clearly changed. What it takes, I think, to win politically is very much in flux. I mean, and that's what we're seeing right now in Congress, where you've got the extreme right, you've got moderates, you've got people who, you know, can't agree. And so that's you know, you're seeing that at the microcosm level in the state where, you know, just the game has simply changed.
All right. And the other part of this is, for instance, on health, some of the biggest fights in the state capitol are over health care, over what insurance should be mandated to cover, over what profession is allowed to do this or that. And a lot of that argument has now shifted up to D.C.
Or to next session, next year.
Exactly, waiting for D.C.
Right, exactly.
So just a quick thought. I haven't had a chance to think this through, Jim, but, of course, one of the concerns that Governor Deal had about the health care bill that is not going to get a vote now is that it would make it hard for the state. The funds coming in block grants to the state would be based on how much the state had been putting into Medicaid. Georgia did not take advantage of the federal money they could have had, and the bill was going to cut off states that didn't take advantage of that money. So in some ways, perhaps this opens the door for Georgia to rethink whether it wants to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, I just don't think that's going to
happen. Okay. Another story. You mentioned it briefly. You're writing about it Sunday. I mentioned it at the start of the show. What are we talking about when we talk about the Democratic battle between the Stacys?
Okay. We've known for some time that House Minority Leader Stacey Abrams of Atlanta has been looking at a run for governor in 2018. That's no secret. She's been making the rounds nationally, trying to make contacts and such. But on Wednesday night, a state representative by the name of Stacey Evans of Smyrna began making phone calls to her friends, telling her that she was indeed thinking of a run for governor. And now Stacey Evans, she's a little bit younger than Abrams, but she's already, I mean, she was, they tried to draw her into the 2016 race against Johnny Isaacson. It didn't work. But she's kind of seen as an up-and-comer. And so you could have two women battling next year to become the first female nominee of a major party nominee for governor.
Okay, Anita and Hank. When we hear Jim Galloway say, a state representative by the name of Stacey Evans, it tells us this is somebody who's got a long way to go to get some name recognition in this, yes?
Well, yeah. But also, just the battle of the Stacey's there obviously sets it up for a lot of confusion on the ballot.
Oh, okay.
I'd also like to hear, you know, there was a credible candidate for governor last time out, Jason Carter. Certainly want to know what his thoughts are on this.
Well, he has not yet made his decision yet. And if Jason Carter gets in, I would think that Stacey Evans gets out. Mm-hmm. But to go to name recognition, actually, it gets kind of curious because no matter which Stacey puts out an ad, the other can actually profit from it.
Right.
That's going to be fun, interesting to watch. Jim, you've watched Stacey Evans. I've watched her a little less than you have. She's a credible, smart legislator.
These are two of the brightest minds in the state capitol.
Yeah. Evans's
emphasis has been on kind of increasing hope coverage for technical colleges. She's very much oriented toward blue collar jobs. Abrams has, of course, had her fingers in a whole lot of pies just because she's been the Democratic leader.
Okay, and the reason this is not too early to start talking is that the day the legislature finishes up, which is what, Wednesday, next Wednesday or Thursday?
Next Thursday,
that governor's race, Republicans and Democrats, the starting gun
Casey Cagle, Brian Kemp, and maybe David Ralston.
All right, we are out of time for today's show. Plenty of time to talk about the governor's race. We're going to come back next week. We're going to talk about the 6th District congressional race. It'll be really interesting to see how that shapes up in the aftermath of this health care failure day, how Republicans are going to deal with Donald Trump in the aftermath of this. Hank Klibanoff, Anita Sharp, Jim Galloway, thank you for being here. Just to recap, President Trump, just a matter of minutes ago, told reporters that they are pulling the health care bill off the floor. They are not going to vote on it. This was the signature bill that Donald Trump promised on the first day. He would repeal Obamacare and have the best plan you've ever seen put in place. We'll be talking about the fallout from that and much more when we come back on Monday with Brian Robinson, Theron Johnson, and Jim Galloway of the AJC. So thanks very much for being here. Thank you, Jenny Ament. Thank you, Tyler Morris. Thank you, Lisa Clark. Everybody have a good weekend. Relax. Get some rest. We'll see you on Monday afternoon at 2:00.